Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi Ksubos Mem Zayin. We are holding right on top of the Amud. B'mas Yodeho Minolam. In the Mishnah, we learned that a father is entitled to his daughter's earnings. B'mas Yodeho Minolam. How do we know this is so? Da'a Marav Huna Amarav. Rav Huna quotes Rav. Minayin Shemansi Habas Lav. How do we know indeed that a daughter's earnings go to her father? Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, V'chayim kar ishes biteli amo. When and if a father actually sells his daughter as a maidservant. Now we have an extra word, le'amo, as a maidservant. Obviously, that's what he's doing. The Pasuk here is trying to sort of connect the two things. A daughter's relationship with her father is somewhat similar. It has similar elements as a maidservant with her master. We are equating the two things. Ma omo, just as by a maidservant. Ma siyo de la rabo, her earnings are directed to her master. He gets what she makes. Af bas, likewise, by a daughter who is either a ktana or a na'aro. Ma siyo de la avia, her earnings, her salary, goes to her father. But perhaps this is specific to a ktana, the motzi mazbila, who a father can sell, which is the subject of this pasuk, aval nara. But once she reaches the state of nara, she's already past 12 years old, the loy motzi mazbila, where a father can no longer sell a daughter at that point as a maidservant, as the Gemara in Kedushin proves from the psukim. So once he loses that privilege, once he loses that control, perhaps her earnings likewise would go to herself. She would keep her wages. The Pasuk is equating a daughter to a maidservant. Sure, a daughter who is at a point, at an age where you can sell her, so then when she's in her father's domain, her father gets her earnings. We equate the two things, but once she's past that period, she's a nara, who's to say he retains rights to collect her earnings? Answers the Gemara, Mistavra, it's actually a svara, it's logic. Mistavra davia havu, it's probable that even a nara's earnings are meant to be collected by the father. Because if you would propose otherwise, that her ma'ase yodayim do not go to her father, then we'll have a kasha. Eloha dezochi lerachmona la'av. If so, this halacha that we know, that a father has the schus, has the control, has the ability, right? The Torah, rachmona, was mezaka la'av, granted a father rights and control over his daughter, lemimser lechupa, to arrange a chupa for her, right? It's in his control to do that. Well, first of all, how do we know? That's what Rashi says, because the Pasuk says, Asbiti nosati lishazeh, I handed my daughter over to this man, I married her off, I arranged a chuppah for her. Now, Heichi motzi masrla, how can he arrange it for her? How can he orchestrate this type of arrangement? Can compel her to be involved in a chuppah? How come avata lo mimasi odeh? Well, at that point, she has to take off from work. So how could he force her to stop working and lose wages? You know what the answer is? Apparently, her wages are his. And if it's his, so it's his prerogative to have her take off from work to attend a chuppah that he has arranged for her. And that's the raya, that the ma'as yodayim, even of inara, go to the father. Paruch Rav Achoy. So Rav Achoy had a kash on this. What kind of proof is this? The fact that he compels her to attend a chuppah and take off from work, that's a right that her wages are his? Maybe he's actually giving her her lost wages. The schar for pakata, Rashi says, bitelus, for sitting idle, for not working. He's compensating her for that. Okay. Inami or the Masa la Belelia. Maybe he arranged the chuppah at night when she's out of work. Inami or the Masa la B'Shabbosos. Maybe the wedding took place on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And Tosfos has a kash on this. The Gemara in Ma'id Katan says he's not meant to marry on Yom Tov and Shabbos. Yes, on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, Vasamachta B'Chagecha, he meant to be experiencing the Simchas Yom Tov, which is not meant to be interfered by a competing simcha of marriage. So how could the Gemara suggest that he's marrying her off on Shabbos? Tosfos says a novel chiddush. He did the chuppah a moment before Yom Tov, during Tosefes Yom Tov, the extension of Yom Tov, which on the other hand, one hand is considered halachically as Yom Tov, in which case you have to cease from work. She's not working at that point, but it's not yet the zman of the simcha of Yom Tov, and therefore it's not considered an interference with Simchas Yom Tov. Interesting Tosefos. In any case, that's the answer to your question. Well, actually, that's a question on your answer. You're telling me, well, the very fact that a father can have his daughter go to the chuppah upon his instruction is a raya that the father really controls her earnings. No, maybe he's compensating her, maybe he's doing it when she's out of work during nighttime or on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So there's no proof from here to your point that a father is entitled to the masir daim of his daughter, if she is a nara. Rather, it's as follows. Ketana litzricha kra. We had that pasuk before. V'chayimkor ish es bitei li'ama, equating the daughter vis-a-vis her father with a maidservant vis-a-vis her master. Earnings go to the master, earnings goes to the father. Oh, we had a kasha, maybe that's by a ketana, who we can sell, but maybe not by a nara. That was a question that we left off with, and we were looking for an alternate source. Says the Gemara, let's go back to that original pasuk. The question was, maybe it's specific to a ketana? No, el ketana leitzricha kra. The earnings of a ketana going to her father does not require a pasuk. Why? It's plain logic. Hashta zevuni mazbin. Look, if a father can actually sell his daughter when she's a ketana, sell her as a maidservant, does one need to even speak about earnings? Going to the father, if I can sell her, of course I can collect her earnings and her wages. You don't need a pasuk for that. Elo, rather, ki istra krala nara. If there is an extra pasuk, apparently it's for the nara, that even by her, the masi yodayim go to her father, and that's how we know this halacha. What else is a father entitled to when his daughter is either a ketana or a nara? Baforas nedoreha. He can interfere with her vows. Mila nolan, how do we know? Dichsiv binoreha, even when she's a nara, even beyond a ketana, binoreha beisavia, she's in her father's jurisdiction with respect to nedarim. Umekabalas gita, he can go ahead and arrange a get for his daughter at this point in her life. Minolan, how do we know? Dichsiv, pasuk says, v'yatza, she leaves her husband v'haisa and gets remarried. And the pasuk here is connecting the two events. Iskush, yitzia, leaving her husband. Divorce is linked lahavaya to marriage. And just like by marriage, a father has a say. He arranges it. He's entitled to the kesef, kedushin, etc., as we learned yesterday. Likewise, by yitzia, when it comes to divorce, he is a party of interest, and he can get involved and control those proceedings. However, a father will not have the peris, will not consume any produce coming off a field which his daughter owns, which she had received from the other side of the family, from her mother's side, which is really hers. He's not entitled to any peris coming off that field, as opposed to a husband who will have access to those peris, as we're going to see later. So according to our Mishnah, there's no peiros to a father. Tana Rabbanan, went in a brisa. Indeed, Ha'av, Einoy Eichel peiros b'chayi bita, he will not derive the peiros during his daughter's lifetime. This is in line with the Tana in our Mishnah. No peiros to a father. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he disagrees. Ha'av Eichel peiros b'chayi bita, a father does receive those peiros. But Mike Miflegi, what's the rationale behind this machlekes? Tana Kama Savra. The first shita that says there's no peiros, he holds, b'yishleim abal, I understand why a husband would get peiros. Tekinu le'rabbanan peiros. Chachamim established, and granted him this chus to collect his wife's peiros in order to ensure that in case she gets captured, he will be there for her. He will go redeem her. That's the deal. You got the peiros, and if she's in need of redemption, you will offer that ransom. Deem kain, because otherwise, mim navalei parak. If you don't give him the husband, the peiros. Rather, you say, look, the peiros belongs to her. Or we can say, it belongs to her, and let's leave it aside. Let's create a savings account, an insurance account, just in case she needs it in the future for ransom. Mim navalei parak, he'll withhold. He'll avoid redeeming her. Right? He'll say, look, you have a savings account. Use that for your ransom. And it can very well turn out that there isn't enough income. There isn't enough funds in that account to account for her ransom. So better have the husband get the peiros all throughout her lifetime. He gets that income on condition that he commits to redeem his wife as per need. It's like an insurance policy. You're paying in, and when it comes to, you get that payout irrespective of how much you paid in. That's the way insurance works, right? So that was the wisdom behind the Takanas Chazal, to give a husband peiros. Elo av, but when it comes to a father, does he need an incentive to go redeem his daughter who was taken into captivity? Elo av, Michael Amemer, Dimimna Vele Parik. What are you worried about? That he's going to back out and not step in when his daughter needs him? Belav hachi parakla, regardless of the peiros privileges, he will go and redeem her. There's no need to give him that access. That's the Tanakhama's view on the matter. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Dosavar, whereas the other shita holds, av nami, by a father as well, we're concerned that mim navale parak, perhaps he'll back away and say, well, you don't need me. I don't need a redeemer. Sovar, he'll figure, and he'll claim, kisa, a packet of money, Nikita Eliyah, is sitting on her, meaning she has a bloated savings account from all her income. Tezava tifrek nafsh, let her go and redeem herself using her own funds. What a father. So, therefore we want to circumvent that situation, and therefore we give him this chus. You know what? You take her peiros, and if it ever comes to, you'll be there for her, and you'll redeem her, irrespective of the amount of funds needed for that purpose. Interesting, machlekes. So, peiros go to a husband, that's for sure. What about a father? We have machlekes. So the Mishnah continues, nises, yos, nises, once she actually marries, yoser olav habal, shu'echel peiros b'chaya. A husband has an additional privilege. He gets the peiros during her lifetime. Tana Rabba. Now we're sort of going off on a tangent. Kasav lo peiros. So inside the actual ksuba, they would mention many things. There's something called nedunya, which basically means they would list items or properties which she is bringing with herself into the marriage. And now the husband sort of assumes responsibility for those items and has access of use. And if she should pass away, these are basically her assets, which go over to him as the legal yoirish of his wife. So Tanu Rabban, we learned in a brisa, kasav lo peiros ksus v'kelim. A father actually listed in the ksuba fruit, garments, utensils, all different types of paraphernalia, she'avoyu imo mebeis avil beis bala, which will be transferred with the wife from father's home to husband's home. And according to Rashi, this was actually written while she was still engaged, prior to marriage. Mesa, and then she passes away prior to marriage. So the marriage was never really actualized, but there was a commitment from father to give all these items. Can the husband collect on this commitment? On the one hand, you committed. On the other hand, if you marry her, you'll get it, but it's still premature. Says the Tanakhama, premature. Lo yizocha habal bedvarim alalu. Husband cannot collect these things. It was with the mindset that you will marry her. which hasn't happened. However, Mishum Rabbi Nosson Amru, it was said in the name of Rabbi Nosson, Zocha HaBaal, B'dvarim Halol. Yes, indeed. He acquires these items, despite the fact that he never actually married her. So Tanakama says, no. Rabbi Nosson says, yes. Lema, perhaps we can suggest that Biplukta, the Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, the Rabbi Nukha Miflik, this Machlekes that we just discussed, can be paralleled with a similar machlekes. We turn Rabbi Lazar and the Rabbanon. This none. We know it in the Mishnah. Nis Armala and Nis Garsha. So this fellow wrote a ksuba for his wife, which contains the base amount of 200 zuz, plus the supplemental Tosefes ksuba, which typically a husband would add to the base amount. The question is, at what point can she collect on that ksuba? Does she have to wait for marriage? Or if something occurred prior to marriage, divorce or death, she can collect on the entire amount even before marriage. That's the machlokes. This armala, she became an almana, he passed away. Or this garsha, or divorced. Beimena nesuin, beimena irisin, whether post-marriage or pre-marriage, goiva es hakoil, she collects on the entire amount. After all, he committed. And he didn't clearly say that the supplemental amount is dependent upon marriage. He gave her a ksuba during engagement, containing the entire amount. She gets everything. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Omer, no. We split the fund. We split the pot. Mina nesuin, goiva es hakoil. If it's post-marriage, then she collects, she's entitled to the entire amount. Umina irisin, but if it's pre-marriage, b'sula goiva masayim, v'almana mana. She's entitled to the basic amount. A b'sula gets 200, an amana just 100, but the supplemental amount mentioned in the ksuba, that is marriage related. He only wrote the extra amount with the mindset of marriage. I'll marry, I'll give you. But until that happens, the base amount, okay, but not the supplemental. The Gemara will now suggest that perhaps the machlekes that we had earlier regarding the nedunya that a father promises to hand over to the chassan, the question was whether he's entitled to get that at Erisin, or he has to wait until Nisuin. That's totally in this machlekes regarding the ksuba, whether it's activated at Erisin or only at Nisuin. Lamanda Omar Loi Zacha. Well, the Tanakama who maintains that a husband does not have access to the Nidunya prior to the actual marriage, that's in line with whose shita? Kir Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who likewise, by the ksuba commitment between the husband to the wife, says that it depends on marriage. Uman de Omar Zach, whereas Rabbi Nosson, who said that a husband is entitled to be Yerush, his wife's Nedunya, even prior to marriage, Ki Rabbanon, that will be in line with Shittas Rabbanon, that Rabbanon say that in terms of the husband committing to the wife, even pre-marriage, the commitment is totally intact. So perhaps these Shittas correspond with each other. Loi, no, perhaps not. No connection. Unrelated. The Kuli Amo, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, perhaps both those shitas, Tanakama and Rabbi Nosson, will be fully consistent with shitas. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rashi says we prefer him because that's how we paskin. So they're all going like that shita. That when it comes to a ksuba commitment between the husband towards the wife, that's primarily related to marriage. Certainly the supplemental amount is associated with marriage. So that's agreed upon by all shittas. Now, therefore, the Tanakama, who maintains that a husband does not have access to the nedunya of his wife if she passed away before marriage, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that's fully compatible with Rabbi Elazar's shita, that certain things are marriage dependent. Hitesef es ksuba, the nedunya, that works perfectly fine. Whereas Rabbi Nosson, who maintains that a husband can access the nedunya even prior to marriage, he'll say, I can perfectly work with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because there's a difference between the two cases. Ad kan loika amar, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Because, yeah, when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that she is not entitled to Tesefes Kesuva until marriage, that's only Ella mididei lidida, when it's funds and commitments coming from him to her. Shaloi kasavla, because his mindset was marriage. Aval mididoli d'day, but something coming from her to him, such as the nidunya, committed by the father-in-law to the son-in-law, in that case, perhaps it's different. Afilu Rabbi Elazar ben Azari might, even Rabbi Elazar would agree that perhaps he can have access before marriage as well. And if his wife should pass away during engagement, he can inherit that property. Why? The mishamichtuniyu, because the whole point was, I'm giving it to you because you committed to take my daughter. Chasuni is the lesson of marriage. Chasuno. So you're on the way to marriage, I'm committing this to you. The fact is, they got to that point, they got engaged, they were about to get married. So perhaps there's room to think that he's willing to give it over and allow his son-in-law to accept and to access and to be yerish that property. Tesis actually asks, he says, Chasuni, that's typically a term associated with actual marriage, not committing to marriage. So that's why Rabbi Natan learns the Gemara totally different than Rashi. He says, we're speaking that she had passed away after marriage, and still Tanakama maintains, since the Nadunya, you know, paraphernalia never actually was delivered to their home, and you know, the father's mindset is, look, I'm giving all this stuff so that you both, as a couple, can enjoy it. If you haven't really taken possession of these things, and my daughter hadn't really enjoyed it, then this is not what I had in mind, and therefore he shouldn't inherit these, you know, these items. That's the Shitas Tanakama. Rabbi Nosson says, no, the fact is, once he's married, he's entitled. That's how Rabbi Natan learns the entire Gemara. And that's what the Gemara means. Mishmich Suni, the whole point was, look, I'm giving it to you because you're marrying her, and they married. It's interesting that Rabbi Natan actually brings that the halacha lemaisa is that if a chasan got a commitment from the father-in-law, you know, to get XYZ as in the dunya, and then you know, the daughter passed away before they got, you know, possession of these items, so then it goes back to the it belongs to the father-in-law. Not only that, Rabbi Natan had a takana. This is a very famous takana, that even if the items had been transferred into their possession, into the couple's possession, but unfortunately tragedy struck and she passed away within the first year, Shana Rishona, Rabbi Natan made a takana. It's a very famous takana that the nedunya items should go back to the father-in-law. Look, it was such a short experience. This is not what I had in mind, and it goes back to him. And this is actually a takana that was enacted in many communities, and it's brought in halacha, and a lot of tshuvas about it. Many communities had different versions and variations of this takana, but the common denominator was that the point was to be fair. Look, I gave all this for the couple. I didn't have a mind, you know, just to give it to you as a single man. If you're not living with her anymore, then perhaps give it back to me. Some say the same thing would apply with a divorce that took place at, you know, such a short, over such short time. It's interesting to note that some, I once heard a nice pshat, some say that Rabbeinu Tam was called as such, Rabbeinu Tam, because there's a Gemara, it's actually a Brais and Teres Koyanim, V'tam L'Rikoy Chacham, this is a pasuk in B'chukoysa by the Klolis, that you're going to toil for nothing, for naught. V'tam, it's going to be just, you know, used up, L'Rik, for naught, Koy Chacham, all your efforts. And the Teres Kahanim says it's referring to a fellow who, you know, promised the world to his son-in-law, and she passed away in short order, and then he loses all that commitment that he committed and he gave away. So Rabbi Natan was trying to protect against that situation, and he was masakin that if it happened in such short time, he gets back what he gave. That's why he's called Rabbi Natan, because he addressed this concern of Vatam Lurikei Chachem. A cute anecdote. Okay. Back to the Gemara. So, a husband is entitled to the peiros, but this comes with obligations. He has to look after her if, in fact, she needs to be redeemed. What else is a husband obligated? What are his obligations and duties? Chayev ben zaneh, he has to feed his wife. Tana Rabban. There are three privileges, three entitlements to a husband, which are paralleled by three commitments, tit for tat. Tiknu mezoneh seh, the chachamim u'masakin, that a husband supports his wife, he feeds his wife, tachas masiyadeh, in exchange for receiving her wages. Ukvorasa, he must accommodate her burial needs, if the need should arise. Tachas ksuvas, in exchange for the nidunya, which she gave him. Lefichach bal eichel peiris. That explains why the husband would have the peiris of his wife's properties. These are called nichsei melug, certain properties which were not recorded in the ksuva, for instance, a property which she inherited after marriage. So that property is totally hers, but he has access to the peiris. That's why he eats peiris. What do you mean, that's why? Who spoke about peiris? Peiris man dechar shemayu. Who even alluded to peiris? What are you referring to peiris? Something which you haven't yet mentioned. Oh, chesure mechstra. The braisa is meant to be learned as though it's missing some words. The Tanoim would many times present braisas and mishnas as well in very short order, very concise form, due to their advanced, you know, levels of intelligence. And we have to toil and figure out sometimes. We need to actually, you know, edit and insert some words to properly understand the braisa. Here as well, chesure mechstra v'chitani. We insert some words and read the braisa as follows. Number one, tiknu mezoneh tachas masiyadeh. Chachamim gave her mezoneh in exchange for the masiyadeh which she gives him. Upir kaina, and they gave her redemption, meaning he has to redeem her from captivity. Tachas peiris, in exchange for the peiris that he gets from her. Ukvurasa, tachas ksuvasa, he has to bury her in exchange for the ksuba entitlement, the access to the nedunya, which he's yerish upon her death. I was once thinking an interesting, acute way to remember this formula. So you have the mezoneis, parallel to masiyadeh. You have peiros that he gets, tachas pirkoina. You have kvurasa, that tachas kisuvasa. So it fits very well. Oh, so now that we know that the husband gets the peiros, lefichach baal oichel peiros, that's exactly why he gets peiros. My lefichach, what's the point of going back and over this thing again? That's why he gets peiros. Well, we just said he gets peiros. What's the point? Oh, mal detema, perhaps I would think. Meichal loy nechlinu. What's the point of him getting peiros? So that he redeems her if the need arises? You know what? Meichal loy nechlinu. We should not allow him just to access the peiros freely. Anuchi anenchinu. Let's just leave it on the side, meaning, unless he's really desperate, he should not access the peiros. Let's make an account for her, a ransom account. This way it's available if she needs to be redeemed. The answer is no, deim ken, because otherwise, mimnev leparak, he might just back off and not get involved in redeeming her. He'll say, look, you know, take those funds and redeem her. And perhaps those funds are not enough. They're not sufficient for redemption. Just the opposite. The question was like this. Ma'od ha-teima, mecha lo nichlinu. Maybe he should not have free access to the peiros. Rather, anuchin and chinu, let's just leave them on the side. Dimkein mimnav leparak. Because if we allow him to have access and consume the peiros, who's to say that he's going to, you know, he's going to be peirik, or he's going to be the redeemer, he's going to take all the peiros and disappear? Kamashmon, the chiddush is no. True, there is a risk on that side of the coin, but this is better. The ha'adifa, this is a preferred method. Let him have the peiros and commit to redeeming her. Zimnan deloimol, because it can very well happen that the funds, the income from the peiros, will not suffice for a proper ransom. So you're not going to have what to use because you're relying on the income, which is not enough. So instead of doing that, let him have access to the peiros. It's like paying into an insurance fund. Let him have it in exchange for his redemption commitment. Uparak l'midideh, and now he'll go and redeem her using his own personal funds. Asks the Gemara. So you say that mezoneis corresponds to masiyadayim, peiros responds to pirkoina, which basically means like this, that suppose she decides, you know, I'm going to give up this right. I don't need your mezonos. I earn enough. I'd rather support myself. Right? So, it would work. If the only reason why he's getting the masi adayim is because he's feeding her, then she has the ability to do away with the entire deal. Don't feed me, I won't give you the masi adayim. Right? But ve'efachana, let's reverse the formula. Who's to say that mezainus correspond to masi adayim, which allow for this doing away of the deal? Perhaps let's reverse it. We'll say that she gets mezainus because he gets peiros. She gets perkoina redemption because of the masi adayim. So let's rearrange the formula. How do you know that it's meant to be done this way? Perhaps differently. Amar Abaye, it makes sense this way. You know why? These things are similar in nature, and they parallel each other. Tiknu matzui lematzui. They enacted something which is a common phenomena, and paralleled it to something which is common as well. Rashi says, mezaynes, as well as masi adayim, are things which are matzui. So it makes sense that they, you know, match each other. V'she'eni matzui l'she'eni matzui. Likewise, they took two items which are relatively uncommon, such as redemption and peiros, for nichsei melugos, not a common phenomena, and they paralleled it with each other, tit for tat. Amar Rava, hai tana sabar mezaynes midairais. Although the previous tana contended that the chi of mezaynes from a husband to wife is only midirabana, but the following tana disagrees. It's rooted in a pasuk. The sanya is the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim says, when he takes that second wife, don't neglect your first wife, and don't abandon her to the elements. Look after her in three ways. She'era, ksusa, va'inosa, la'yigra. So those three words, she'era, ksusa, va'inosa, are pretty much, in a nutshell, the three major commitments between husband and wife. The sanya she'era, what is that? Eil mezoinah, it's feeding her. V'chinu oimer, as the pasuk says, v'asha'achlu she'er ami, they ate the sustenance of my nation, she'era sustenance. What does ksusa mean? You have to provide her with her ksus, kimashmoy, as per the word ksus, clothe her. What is oinasa? Don't neglect her oina. Zu oina ha'amura b'teirah, referring to the time spent together physically. V'chinu oimer, as the pasuk says, im ta'anes b'naisai, lovam, warned Yaakov, don't abuse my daughters, don't neglect their needs. Don't refrain from spending time with them. Ask Tosfos, well, then just the opposite. You see that Lashon Ta'ana means to pain, to inconvenience, to hurt. And here we're saying Oinasa means, it's describing the positive experience of spending time with one's wife. So how do the two things correspond? He says, that's exactly what the Pasuk means. The Pasuk is sort of speaking in a dignified way instead of directly describing the phenomena. The Torah uses the Lashon of Oinasa, which basically means don't avoid, don't be megareya, don't deprive her of something which would be an inui if deprived from. So it's like sort of saying two negatives. Don't do something which, by depriving her of that thing, right, don't be megareya, don't deprive her of something which, when deprived of, is inui. Okay, Rabbi Lezer Eimer, he has a different angle on the pasuk. He says she'era zu oina. That's actually referring to spending time together. V'chinu Eimer, ish el kol she'er, right? The flesh besarei. So she'er besarei is referring to a relative, the extension of your flesh. Le'sikrivu legalis erva. So we see that she'er besarei is referring to this experience. K'susa k'mashmoi, clothing her. Oina sa ilu mezonos, referring to sustaining. V'chinu Eimer v'ayach v'ayervecha, Hashem pained us and had us experience hunger throughout the midbar. And once again, as the Marashah explains, based on Tosfos, Vayancha means to withhold food. And here, Oinasa means be careful not to deprive her of something which, when deprived of, creates inui, i.e., feed her properly. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Eimer, he has a different angle on the pasuk. The word she'era kesusa next to each other tell you, lefum she'era, based on the body build of the Isha, based on her age, based on her size, ten ksusa provide for her clothing needs, which means, in those days, Rashi explains, the younger women would wear, you know, wider cut clothing, that was the style, and older women would wear more of a fitted cut. So he says that, be careful. You have to dress your wife in style. Actually not, Rashi says, means that the older woman can't carry that heavy load, that wide, heavy clothing. So you have to be sensitive to that. Shalayitin la loisha yalda liskina. Don't give the younger women's style clothing to the older woman who can't, you know, carry that for its weight and its size. Veloisha liskina la yalda. Likewise, don't dress the yalda with the begadon of the liskina, which is not fitting and appropriate as per her age and social standards. Okay, what else do we paskin? Do we darshan from the pasuk? It says kesusa v'aynasa. We learn from there. L'fom aynasa ten kesusa. When you provide clothing, it should be based on these seasonal needs, right? During the winter, you have to be warmer than the summer. So the new clothing, buy her in the winter, and the same beged when worn down will serve her well in the summer as well. Shloiten chadosha ma'isachama. Rather than giving her new clothing during the summer when the need isn't so great and just, you know, overloads her. And that's not appropriate. Likewise, washed out and worn out clothing during winter is not either providing for her needs. Rather, give her a new wardrobe during the winter when it's really warming and effective, and the leftovers she'll wear during the summertime. Okay, so bottom line is like this. We have the schism of the father and the schism of the husband. A father is entitled to his daughter's kedushim. That's learned from the pasuk Yatzachinim and Kasa, as we had yesterday. Mitzia, that's Mishum Eva, to avoid any hard feelings. Masya Daim. By Ektana, it's because he can sell her. Of course, he can take her earnings. By Anara, we have the pasuk of Chayimka Ishas Bite Li'ama. A father's schus in his daughter is similar to the master in his maidservant. He gets her earnings. The Nadarim, he can be made for, but Nurebe Savia, it's the pasuk. He can arrange for the get because it's connected to Kedushin V'yatzavahis. A husband gets the peris as well. As the Gemara tells us, the peris correspond to pirkaina, the fact that he's there to redeem her when needed. The masiyo daim he gets because of the mezoinus that he provides for her. And some maintain that this is actually min ha-Torah. And the ksuba, the inheriting, the items mentioned in the ksuba, that's because he's committed to her kvura. Noch 120. All the best to you and hatzlacha rabba.